Hi folks, I'm Alan Watts and this is Cutting Through the Matrix on the 22nd of March 2020. Now I'd like to just mention that you can donate to me during these hard times because I have to survive myself like everybody else during these hard times, and you can do so by going to cuttingthroughthematrix.com website. And once again, bookmark all the other sites I've got listed on there. That's my official sites in case any go down in the crisis. I know my speed and internet has been clamped down on, and they're putting out stories that they're using it for bandwidth for this emergency, etc., etc. There's a lot going on, and a lot of it is untrue, and a lot of it is true for other reasons. However, you can buy the books at Indesa at cuttingthroughthematrix.com. Remember, they've been awful drag on it as time delivery goes because of the crisis. But you can certainly donate to me and keep me ticking over. And you can do so by, as I say, going to cuttingthroughthematrix.com website to find out how to do it and use PayPal, or you can even send cash. There are ways to clean, leave you dirty money, ask the crooks, the people who make it. And it's quite easy to just get by through the crisis, and if we just keep our heads, etc. So what I'm going to do is a two-hour show right now. And for those who want the whole 2 hours, just take it straight from cuttingthroughthematrix.com. And for those who want to upload and find it more difficult to do all in one go, if that's, most folk won't have a problem with it. If they want to, they can take part one and part two afterwards, like 2 hours, split them up if they want to, if it's easier for them. But regardless, I'll put up the complete show on my website, cuttingthroughthematrix.com, and I'll put up the part one and part two of the same show for those who want to take it half and half, basically. And just before I get off for part one, end the part one show, I just want to mention another inconsistency here too, where all the reports are coming out saying, oh, the younger folk are spreading it to everybody else and things like that. It's possible they're carrying it and all. Well, if the asymptomatic, young, healthy people are going to be a danger to everybody else, then why don't you just quarantine all of them? Rather than going for everybody else that's a bit older, etc. And for regarding the quarantine of the young, now remember, for those who are so serious these days, that's a wee joke. Again, even now they're putting out reports that folk who are in their 20s are getting it in Canada, some out of Alberta way, I think it is, which is interesting as well. So, again, cuttingthroughthematrix.com, the whole 2 hour show, or part one and part two, depending on what you, how you take it down. So the title of the full two-hour talk and part one and part two, if I want to break it up, for those who want it broken up into part two parts, those all be called As Sensible Guidance by Governments Banished, A Plentiful Food Supply Is Suddenly Vanished. Hope you're all hanging in there during these incredible crisis times. And of course, it's not really unexpected from people like myself, because this is part of a massive agenda, obviously, probably in the works for a long time. And who knows if they planned the actual date all this would start, or if it was just time to really unroll it during it's hard to even call it a true pandemic in some sense, because according to the definitions, even in WHO and other places, it's hardly at the proportions of pandemic that makes sense. When you see the numbers, and yeah, I know there's other people too who ride along the fact that there's nothing happening at all, and it's just another flu. But regardless of what the truth of it all is, and I must admit it's incredibly confusing from the authorities, from what they're giving you for the data. It's all contradictory, and you wonder if it's all by design. It's contradictory because folk can't get a grasp on it at all, not with the figures they give you and all the rest of it. So anyway, as I say, but big things are happening, and they're already shouting from the rooftops at the control palaces that things will never be the same again. The exact same phrase that came out right after 9/11, as you get that through your heads, because it's going to achieve a lot of the goals of the agenda, of course. I remember a few years back I mentioned, apart from the fact you'd end up with martial law one day, and you'd get ID for food and all the rest of it, and for your vaccinations, and that you wouldn't, this is back in the 1990s, I said it, and eventually you'll have some kind of something on your wrist or whatever, like a bracelet or something. And it would be up to date with all your records, your vaccinations. And if you didn't have it, your up-to-date vaccinations, and they could still use it just with visual ID too, then alarms would go off, just like red alert, red alert, and all that, if you weren't up to scratch. And here we are. It's all getting unrolled as we live through this, of course. So it's interesting to watch it, and also to be partly detached from it in some ways. Of course, we're all affected by what's happening because the Emergency Powers Acts are unrolled as wartime measures, of course, which people accept generally, most folk accept generally, as a necessary in a wartime situation for survival. So give up all the rest of your rights, if you've got any left at all, that is, and of course, you'll be perfectly safe, and they'll take care of you. And I wouldn't count on the latter part either, because it's almost idiocracy and laughable at a lot of the so-called statements from politicians in countries, including Canada, big time in Canada, and all over the world. It's the same kind of thing where people who really are nobodies, they're not there because they're exceptionally bright or anything like that, and often the opposite, in fact, but they're very cunning as far as getting, you know, getting power and using power and getting awfully rich, the ones who rule overs. But to hear that the statements coming out of their mouths are is quite something. But everywhere you look, you see formulas. And they're formulas. I knew that they're unrolled in the NATO-type formula. And it's just like movies. That's where the movies get the idea, too. And, of course, the movies also train you in predictive programming, how to react in such situations by countless zombie movies with pandemics and things like that, until you know it off by heart, what's coming next. But you go through stages of it, and that's exactly how they manage it, just like the meeting that they had with Bill Gates and Johns Hopkins University before this broke loose, with the training group for pandemics, the ones that would manage it. And how they manage the public. The first law, of course, is never tell the public the truth. So it doesn't vary that much from everyday life without the pandemic, really. But they really don't tell you the truth. And the newspapers, which are all on board before it all happens, even during the training exercise, they had them all on board, they said, if one should ever break out. And that's all social media as well, the big ones that most folk use, had all agreed to be on board with them to manage the public. And much, much more than just managing us. But the key is they don't tell the public the truth. And in the first month or two, lie through your teeth as the governments and all the different agencies involved, including eventually military forces, are all geared up to manage it. But don't tell the public this is happening. Just kind of give them vague answers to things. And that's what we've had. And again, as it all happens and unrolls, you have psychological warfare going on, because that's what these agencies that manage all use, behaviorists and psychologists and the neuroscientists, etc., and the behavioral insights teams. They've got thousands of these people all over the planet working in tandem to manage our brains, to make sure we do what they want us to do without ever figuring out we're getting used. And that's really at work today. Really at work. Number one, there's nothing that isn't known about how to handle and manage pandemics. It's very, very old understanding. The medical profession used to always get taught all about it, literally, and its history. They used to get taught a lot of things that are not taught anymore, too. And the first thing you do, if you still have a nation state, that is, if you have a country, a national country, the first thing you do is to safeguard your domestic people, your own people, first and foremost, from getting contaminated, from coming in from countries which have the contaminations. That's vital. That's the first thing you do. And that means that even your own citizens that are outside the country are locked out for a long time, perhaps. And it's sad, but if you go into full lockdown that way, then obviously you need at the very, very least awfully restrict the cases that are coming into the country in one way or another, even sneaking in, because there's a lot of ones who sneak in as well during these times. And we know that even from China, we've lost count on people who vanish from China to all over countries, neighbouring them too, and over here, the first whiff of this. But the fact is, the first thing you do is you stop all the international flights coming in. Just a few days ago, I don't know if it's still, I imagine it's still the same. Canada, we're using about 5 international airports to bring folk back and forth all over. You could still book flights to get to Wuhan, round trips, by going to Beijing first and then again another flight and then to Wuhan if you wanted to. And for about $1,200, you could get a holiday there, if that's a holiday for you, if you like excitement, I guess. And you... And it was $1,200, including your hotel and the whole thing. And then you go back the same way you came, basically, and into the country. And there's no questions asked in Canada. They even had reporters at Toronto Airport asking people coming in every day if they had any restrictions applied to them. Did any authorities stop them when they got off the planes coming into Canada, back in from these countries, and the affected areas? No questions at all. No temperature taken, nothing like that. And then they were scattered. Makes no sense. See, there's sense and nonsense, right? And when it makes nonsense, not sense, which is nonsense, you see. And then you have to see, and this is the thing, they're not stupid at the top. Don't forget, behind every great tactic of terror, there are massive businesses and massive agendas already to unravel upon the world and to be implemented. And someone's going to benefit. There'll be different companies, for instance, benefiting. And you can't believe the rhetoric in the stock market for the big companies for vaccines and the trial this and trial that and trial antivirals, etc. They're all getting billions. They're just got their hands out and they're getting thrown billions through to them by a terrified public via their colluding governments, perhaps. But the first thing is, why would you still be bringing planes in normally from these affected places? And don't forget, too, that those who have tested negative, supposedly, with these strange, I hate to call them tests in a way, you know, would admit that so many of them are just faulty. Maybe the public are shocked by that. I don't know. But I can remember the names of the big corporations that got the contracts. For years, they were doing the blood work for definitely Ontario and in other parts of Canada too, these laboratories. And for years and years and years, they managed a massive, massive business. Guaranteed money, remember, when the insurance companies, this quasi-government oversight in Canada, and you still pay for your insurance, you see. It's taking off your wages, for instance. And businesses had to pay it too, so... You have these companies who are making a fortune off of doing blood work. And a few years back, and I remember, it wasn't a surprise to me, in fact, that eventually there was a huge lawsuit against them, and I don't know how it started or whatever, and they were transferred, the business was transferred to some other company. And the big one that had the contract for years and years and years, almost had been guessing the results. They were putting them through so fast and whole bit and telling their employees, almost appropriate, well, to guess. Just make a guess, like a flick a coin. And it was that, like a flick a coin. And half the tests were positive and half were negative for any particular thing, which it was. It was a toss of a coin, you see. Now, you see, we've been brainwashed for so long. And this is vital to understand. Through countless ways, through Bernays and ideas of the corporations that he did the PR propaganda work for and things like that, it escalated from there through fiction mainly and television programs. And mainly aimed, I know in Britain it was aimed mainly at the women through soaps like Dr. Kildare and things like that. And what a wonderful young man, you know. He's a good-looking young man. How about wonderful? No swooning and all that. And this guy he didn't sleep. Not only didn't he sleep because he worried about his patients that much. You wouldn't believe it. You wouldn't believe how dedicated this guy was. He wasn't in it for the money, you see. And he knew that his patients off by who they were, everything about them. And they were like personal friends, as just instant friendship. But he couldn't sleep when he worried. And in the middle of the night sometimes, voila. It would just hit them, you know, and wow, there's the answer to the problem. and all the women would swoon and say, what a dedicated young man. They'd all want to be hitched to this guy, you see. And that really did start the ball rolling for millions of people across the world watching these soaps. And then you got into Emergency Ward 10, you see, another fictional thing. And there's the emergency staff. But again, now you got into the personal lives of them. They were just ordinary people too, with ordinary problems. And amongst all their ordinary problems, you had all the politically correct agendas, like what you do in a promiscuous society and things like that. So, and how is it? How do you manage any problem, et cetera, et cetera? And that's how you're brainwashed. But again, this hospital, you don't want to be in it. Because everybody in there who worked there, they didn't sleep. These people who don't sleep, like Kildare and all the rest, they never have bags under their eyes or anything. They never start making mistakes and spilling their coffee because they're half sleeping. No, these people are on the ball. I guess dedication just makes you so alert and well. Right? Maybe that's the key to health, is to love people so much that you're not there for a paycheck, is to help them. You see, the hospitals today, too, are public-private. They've been public-private for a long time in the socialist countries. And the American companies, if you want to call them American, it's okay. They might not even be American, really, but there's chains of these things across the planet now. And the governments are in public-private. You pay for all the costs of everything, and they take the profit. That's the wonders of it. And if you forget that for a second, that's why they're really there, is for business. It's a big business, you see? Forget all your propaganda. Because it doesn't work out. Again, people are fallible, obviously. You know, so they don't think so, but they're fallible. And they'll soak up the PR things about who goes into hospital. You see, it doesn't matter who you are. If you're a nobody, you never get your name mentioned in the paper, but you get a celebrity going in. And, oh my God, we're all concerned about it. Oh, just like the soaps, you see. Oh my goodness. Will Jim be back in time for his date with so-and-so? This is talking about the soap, but he's in hospital right now. Yeah? This is the junk your head is full of, because you're dealing with a business. Now, the business is not even the same business that it used to be years ago. The British system, for instance, had a good National Health Service initially. And like everything else, it becomes ultra-politicized. And eventually, towards the end, I can actually tell you when the end really was, even though the still pretends it's gone. But it was so highly unionized in different parts. And there were all different kinds of unions for different segments of the hospital staff. That things were dysfunctional. And again, too, the country wasn't training domestically enough doctors either for the job. So you had all kinds of conflicts between different groups, even people coming into the countries from different parts of the country fighting with each other in the hospital. I'm talking about staff. And then once you bring political correctness into it and priority hirings, priority promotions, not in other words, people get promoted not for the fact of their abilities, then things go downhill very quickly in any area. That's sensible too. But the hospital system, in Britain, is a profit-making thing for those who work inside. I'm talking about the bigger, the higher staff and specialists and so on. It's just incredible the way they take home with them. Honestly, it truly is. And Canada is the same. So you get away from this Dr. Kildare idea that he's there because they love you. That's why they're there. Right? That, you cancel that out right away. And today you don't have in the hospitals the purpose that they were founded upon, was to help the infirm. That's what they're called, infirmaries. The infirm. And folk often get confused with old folks' homes and hospitals. A hospital is not an old person's home. And so your general hospital has all age groups within it, you see. And they're supposed to deal with disease. That's part of their function. And they have teams of infectious disease specialists that work there and so on. So hospitals are meant to do the purpose that they're there for. However, so much has really changed because, as I mentioned last week and weeks before, and even long, long before that, we do have get away from the fictional side of things and look at the real world. Incredible evil prospers because we're trained to be naive. And, oh, nobody would do that. Nobody would do that. It's you understand, there's no weapon made that hasn't been used. That's why they're made. They don't make things to take photographs and stand beside it so they can show their grandchildren. And often the guys who work with it don't think they're going to live long enough to have any grandchildren. But in the world of science today, the scientists, remember, are the new high priests in the white coats. That's their uniform, the white coat. And doctors have the stethoscope hanging around, because that was all popularized by movies, by the way, and television dramas, not by reality. Having something hanging around your neck like that, if you try to run, if there's a particular code gets sounded in the hospital, is a very impractical thing to do. And if it falls on the floor, it's rather dirty, especially in the hospital. So you don't want to touch the patients with that after you drop them. And that's, so hanging around your neck's a bad place. But that's what they do. Well, this is what I am, you see. That distinguishes you from a local grocer who might also wear a white coat, you see. He may have a sprig of parsley tied to his lapel, and that's okay. But everything today is symbology and who you think they are, etc. But people really are not there in this day and age with the same motivations to help anybody, except maybe themselves and the status. I'm not the first person to mention this, but Professor Carol Quigley talked about it in his book Tragedy and Hope, in one of the chapters about the up-and-coming big middle class in the US, and how the greed factor and the system of the culture that was literally dog-eat-dog to climb to the top, and that the medical industry would literally go to the dogs in a sense. And I hate the expression, like dogs, but it would fall apart because of the greed factor. As everybody rushed into it as a place to get money, as opposed to there to do you realize the 1920s and even the 30s, up until that period into the 40s, people who went into medicine often at one time came from the wealthier classes. They didn't need the cash so much, and they did do house calls. They really did. And they did know their area people, the people in their community. They did know them. You try getting that kind of service today, it's not going to happen. And the hospitals today are not there just to help people out of any kind of love for the people. They're there because it's a business, and they've all been trained today in the science now, which they've adapted into it, called, you know, situation ethics and bioethics, who should live and who should die. And it's a rather frightening place to go into today. If you know you're already ticked off before you go in, is savable, not savable, or they're going to determine whether they even bother treating you. I'm not kidding you. That's what it is. And the hospitals too, by the way, which are into euthanasia these days, is not a place. You better start thinking and reevaluating what these places are. I mean, Dr. Kildare didn't say. Back in the old days, when he was asked out for he didn't have dates, you see, he would just accept a meeting someone for a cup of coffee. That was as far as they went, you see. But he didn't say, "I'm sorry, I can't make it. I've got 10 patients to euthanize." You know? We've turned a whole different way in direction of what it is today. Told you even have, and I think in Canada, in Ontario, they had an article about a glut of organs harvested. Thanks. There was a glowing today. Our policies now for assisted suicide or you know, euthanasia. That's what it is. And it's promoting a good thing. So you have to really think about things. And so you're seeing in Italy, and Italians haven't gone all the way to just see us all as paychecks. The patient service. They haven't seen us all. It's different. Oh, you're savable, but I decide I'll save you, but I won't save you according to your social status as well. But that's part of what I'm going to save you. I'm not kidding you. As we're all equal in such socialist systems as we have in Canada, for instance. Yeah, what a joke that is. But you have to get it through our heads, I suppose, that it's overwhelmed. And we only have X amount of a limited supply of medications to treat them with. Well, we've got to give it to the ones who've got a better chance of pulling through, right? Like, and then a whole list checklist of young people, blah, 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 and, you know. Getting back to where hospitals were, it was for generally the older people who were getting infirm. You're not so infirm when you're young, you see. You become infirm when you get older. And they call them infirmaries. And you did everything you could to save life, because life at that time was called a strange thing. It was called precious, you see, precious. And people believed that. And you did all you could. Once I went in the hospital, they didn't say, oh, they're going to do their best to kill me gently. No, that wasn't done then, you see. Today they've got special teams that come and see you. And the nicest person you'll meet in a hospital, I met them in the 2016, well, I ended up in there, and I was coughing blood, a similar thing as this thing here. And they have their little team there, and they're looking at you like three monkeys, you know. And so, in the hospital that I went to, in Canada, back then, the nicest guy, who came back, he's the only one who came back occasionally to tell me how it was progressing, and how those tests were and all the rest of it. I could tell he was trained in being nice. You see, and he, when he wasn't sure if I had cancers or what the heck it was, I didn't know, the lungs were a mess, and he came up and said, well, you always think about the future, it all depends how you see things, you know, and I was getting you ready for the big decision, you see, but very pleasantly, so they know how to do it, and they've got training for all kinds of responses from different types of people, you see. And whatever you'd say, he had an immediate response. Okay, you use this response in situation C3 or whatever. And I was quite aware of this, and that's what it was. And sure enough, I mean, he had a kind of clinic place that, or a home, they would take people that were on the way, you know, on the big journey, and deal with them and so on. Properly, I'm sure. Again, just like, as I said, Soylent Green, where the book, is it called, Charlotte Hessen's. Kind of manager there, the guy kept the books going and read to him from the books and kept everything straight. He went for euthanasia and had a great send-off in a world that was supposedly overcrowded. That was the idea of Make Room was a book that it came from, the actual movie, Soylent Green. And the book had a great send-off and nice people talked to him and nice music was played and nice old wildlife scenes were there and that was it, you see. That was the end of the book. So we live in a system, really, it's so well controlled today with so many branches of science. My personal opinion is that we're going downhill so quickly from the idea of being human by all the incredible useless degrees that are churned out from universities across the planet. Is this a fairly new thing, this idea that you're all supposed to go to university? Who said that? You see, when you had all kinds of factories and you had all kinds of tech schools as well, as opposed to just having your universities, Germany was a great leader in this. They turned out tradesmen in all kinds of professions, really top-class world people for the whole of Europe, basically. We had anybody else. Except for maybe Japan. And you see, factories were so important because most folk didn't go to university. Now they expect to go. And you can get degrees in belly dancing now, I hear, you know, and things like that. All kinds of social politics and divisions of social politics. It's like multiple divisions of Marxism, basically. And specialist areas of Marxist thoughts and all that kind of stuff. And we're falling apart with all this nonsense. And they end up at their hands. And the scientific groups and the study groups and statistics groups have all got their hands out for life and little companies they join up looking for grants to live on, you see. So they can spew forth. Studies have shown that blah, blah, blah. And you say, oh, that's just so fascinating. You know, I didn't know how many ants did strange sexual things together on a Friday afternoon every once a year. I mean, I could live without it, to be honest. But yeah, this is what the stuff they churn out. Endless rubbish, you see. But then you have the other ones too who work in the labs. I've read the articles over the years, because once in a blue moon, authorities are so fed up of having to pay collapsed loans and grants to these people, or that they're absconded with the cash, where it happens to be, because that's what that happens too. We'll admit that all these things, did you know that eventually scientists hope to blah, 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 and hope to do this, are generally countered or turned over, and the studies have found that this does that, and this does, are basically contradicted with subsequent studies. Most of it is bunkum. But they've got to churn something out to pretend that they're actually doing something for their big grants. I mean, that's what it's all about. It's all about that. And how many years have you read that white wine is a good thing, and then another unit is a bad thing, and they're supposed to try red wine to save your heart? And then it'll come out after that, oh, it's bad to take wine at all in certain conditions. And then they're back to the white wine again before you know it, then the red again. It's just an endless circle of the same old reports that saves them even writing new ones for their big grants. It's just astonishing. So again, getting back to hospitals. If you go into a hospital and your friends go in, you should make sure you have an advocate. Someone who will stand up for you no matter what happens, no matter what the doctors tell them. Because they persuade, but ones who, as I say, who are basically trained to persuade you what to do, what they want you to do, they're very good. You like them. They fit right into a soap opera. You know, they're so concerned. And as they persuade you, oh, I guess so, darling. You should have someone there who's going to stand up for you. You know why? To make sure you come out of the place alive. Because it's not the oldest style at all. Maybe occasionally. You used to have great country hospitals, small hospitals, were more relaxed, but people weren't caught up in the rat race, you see, so much. And if you're caught up in the rat race, you're more inclined to become a bit of a rat yourself. And you'll start to adapt and adopt these particular memes that go across them. Yeah, people really are just, there's just too many people. And people over a certain age shouldn't live anyway, you know. And you know. Isn't it sad when you actually hear folks saying this kind of thing in this day and age? Never dawns on them that the age will get lowered until they're in it. No one bothers to read Julian Huxley's ideas for the socialist society that was to be controlled on behalf of his elite group that he worked for. They gave you socialism, you see. We'll be your champions, you'll all fall for it, but we'll guide and shape you into the system that we wish to have. We'll dethrone you from your throne as being a superior creature on the planet and bring the level of your status down to that of the animal or below. Until basically they'll tell you, your life isn't worth ding ding, you know. You little piece of awful protoplasm, you. And that's how things are done, folks. Everything's done with incredible psychology in this day and age. And the Bernays techniques are all through society and all through the so-called professions at every possible level. Now, back to the unfolding of the, I was going to say the Martian law, but it's the Martian law. And well, Martian would be pretty good for it too, the God of War. Eh? Which, of course, the word actually really comes from. But we are going through a NATO system step by step by step in tandem. As I say, the first step is lie to the public and pretend nothing's happening to you, you'll be fine. The second step is when the media that's been silent up until then, and or at least have been told to attack anyone who's saying this could be a problem and call you conspiracy nuts and so on, who are all on board with it because they're all privately owned cartels who all know each other and work together in clubs on behalf of the governing system, which is not yours. But then the third step is when they're told that this on the same day, they've been in advance, but they're actually given a date. Now it's implement, terrify the public, and they go into hyper mode, way more than conspiracy theory, you know. And until they do a good job of it. I listened to one guy who works way up at the CDC in an interview, and he said that. He was asked a question, aren't you terrifying the public? He said, well, yes, we are, yeah. He says, no, because now it's time to get them to take it seriously, just to terrify them. And that's what the media is there for, not to be very afraid. But there's nowhere you can get any consistent information on this disease. Anywhere at all. As part of it, too, it's obviously deliberate, right? That the idea of not giving you concise information that makes any kind of sense. Have you noticed that? In the same articles, you have contradictions. Maybe five contradictions on what they're telling you are the facts in the same article, by themselves, contradicting themselves. And then they'll give you total coronavirus cases, at least the COVID-19, which they're now calling SARS-2 COVID-19. They'll give you the total cases sometimes for a province of Canada or a state in the US, as an example, or even a city. So you look at the total, it's okay, wow, okay. But then we'll have after it the different categories of it, such as recovered. And you'll see this tiny number, like 5 out of 400. And you're left wondering, okay, did the rest of them die or what? I mean, five of them recover. Who's making this stuff up? Because you would think when you look through it, there'd be an awful lot more folk recovered than five. And you'd have a justification of why they're telling you this and how many recovered previously if it's done by the day or the week. Because they won't even tell you that. It's like, is this today? Is this today's number today? Like 400 new ones got it? Or is that the total it's been from the beginning? You know? I've never seen anything in my life like this. I really haven't. I'm not the only person that's many. I mean, there's other people, there's people in the profession. What on earth is this? You know? Because that's the first thing you think, okay, 400 people got it, five recovered, okay. And then you go into the same articles by the same authors in the same papers, or even government studies, supposedly, or health studies. And they'll say that we don't have the testing kits, but we're going to get them. And then, of course, the top ones, the people at the top will say, well, yeah, we're good. And then you say, okay, well, how did they got confirmed cases done? And you say, okay, confirmed cases, right? How are they confirming it? Are they using what they... See, I know they're in Canada, they're not using the MRIs and so on like they do in China. Every hospital there's got quite a few MRIs. They can really go one after the other, boom, boom, boom. Here in Canada, I'm in Ontario, literally, I'm not kidding you. Like CAT scans, you can be on the books for a year, easily. But there, they can actually diagnose that because you get a particular modelling effect and a patterning in the lungs. You can see the patterning of it and in the blood or even the tissue samples and so on. So you can do it that way too. But most countries are using, oddly enough, signs and symptoms. Now, the signs and symptoms are so incredibly varied. If you've got maybe 15 signs and symptoms, or even 20 signs and symptoms, and I've seen that for this thing, yeah? You may have, and then I'll tell you the classic sign, but then I'll tell you in the same article that not everyone gets all the signs and symptoms, which is normal in medicine, you know. And then you'll get these oddball signs and symptoms, and a lot of them could be anything at all. And I was thinking about, you know, I know that when this happened and broke out in China, in January, China also admitted that there were two of the, like the others, obviously H5N1, I know H1N1 broke out about the same time, these flu strains, the annual type ones, yeah, they're slightly different from the usual ones they vaccinate for. So you had another two strains going through the countries at the same time, and with along the previous strains, right? And I remember when one of the big flu pandemics, you might call it, or epidemic, came through a few years ago, and I did the stories on the radio at the time, and I followed it closely because they were hyping it up, and I thought, well, how are they testing for this one? Because eventually, in a quick time period, they actually said, it was announced, the doctors were told if anybody with a runny nose, and maybe a cough, or maybe a fever, like a head cold, put them down, as this state for granted, that's the flu. And so you had this massive figure of folk with the flu. And at a time when most folk just had a common cold, or the sniffles that you wouldn't even diagnose, you know. In the spring in Canada too, you get incredible fungus breaking out, even in the snow, you know. I get that, but I'm so sensitized, my nose starts going. And you get the mold too, even in the houses, you scrub them, because when you've had maybe about 6 feet sometimes of snow surrounding the walls of your house, and it's going down and down, now that starts the stuff. It really makes a big difference inside the house, on any drywall and so on, and you'll see mold appearing occasionally. That's what happens. Quite common here. In these wooden type houses, eh? So anyway, again, getting back to the facts. After reading about the cases for Ontario and different parts of the country, then you realise, no, they're not testing folk. And then they give you this new thing, you all these different places on the internet, and here's the phone numbers too, and you get five different places to phone to get to a person who might be a real person and start speaking to you. You spend days on this thing. No kidding you. So that they'll decide where you have to get treatment or not. And they've already done it across the world. They're telling folk without any treatment or even testing, just self-quarantine, right? No testing. But they'll go down, you see, as first as presumed cases, and then eventually the presumed bit disappears, and they just put it down as confirmed, even though they haven't been seen. That happened before, as I say, with the previous two big flus that went through over a few years ago. So that's what's happening now too. Obviously, if you're not getting actual any kind of test, there's an awful big chance you've got some other flu or a cold, a head cold. And or even that, plus the allergies that comes in, as I say, with the molds that we have when the snow starts to go down and a bit of warmer weather comes in occasionally. That's very common. So everybody's getting put down as presumed cases, you see. The other day, I looked up Pennsylvania for a person who phoned me. I phoned him. Oh, he phoned me, yeah. And he wanted to know about what they're saying in the newspapers about the confirmed cases there. And I had the same kind of thing. It was identical to Ontario, really, with so many cases and presumed and confirmed, right? It said at the bottom, from a government site down there, from the government, local government site, it said, we shall know a better results, after getting on these statistics and so on, better results when the primary, I think it was a primary set of testing kits are delivered. They didn't have the kits that you tested, so how were they confirming it then? Because they're not taking them in and out to do what the Chinese have been doing in the West. Our system is so broken with greed. It would take you forever to get an appointment for an MRI test, as an example. There's an awful lot of presuming going on, I presume, as far as I can tell. And yet, as I say, the world's been terrified, like never before. We know that the SARS, and this is confirmed by China itself, who also, I can remember way back years ago when the SARS came out, 2003, I think it was, 2003-4, and the big panic in Toronto, but it was pretty well through the Chinese community, you see, and it didn't seem to be catching on amongst other people of other different ethnic groups. And it was really bad because I can remember too when a lot of Chinese had died in a week or so in Toronto, and the local mortician, as a Chinese mortician, they came down with it. I think five of them got it, and they were dealing with the corpses. It was so virulent, the strain. But again, that was contained. But China did, after that, do studies, and they actually wondered, and they said it, that this was a bioethnic specific strain, like warfare type thing. Which is not unheard of, and it's not conspiracy-minded when you have top laboratories like Porton Downs in England that had, I keep telling people about the fantastic interview was given, a very, very rare interview for a port to go down, to even for the breakfast starting in the morning with the scientists as they came in, they were talking about their ethnic-specific diseases, as though they were talking about pruning the roses, you know. This was such a common chat back then. So countries can be excused for wondering, especially when these types of rather exotic types of diseases didn't exist before as such. Not the way they are now. And not the way either when you see so many, again, we're churning out people to be scientists, all with their hands out, you see, who all want their names in the history books for discovering something or creating something, and right down to that article I put up before from a Harvard professor who deals with training people for biolabs and so on, asking if they should be using the laboratories to create potentially deadly pandemic diseases. Well, why are they creating it? Well, the excuse is that, well, it was trying to predict in a thousand different ways how this virus might mutate. What it's like to me is someone who gets a basic machine gun, you see, and I say, I wonder how I could alter this thing. If I jump ahead and see how it improves in 100 years' time, all the different varieties that could make with this machine, and then you do it yourself anyway, don't you go about 1,000 barrels all pointing in the wrong directions? That's pretty well what they're doing in these labs. And they get around the biowarfare treaties by pretending, well, we're doing it for health reasons. We're creating brand new diseases to see if this virus might mutate in this direction. One of those terrifying things was when, a few years back, and I read the articles at the time too, when there were people out to try and dig up corpses in permafrost from the 1918 flu pandemic, and they got samples they revived and admitted, and they'd write up how wonderful it is they had revived the most deadly flu we'd ever known, at least recorded. Who knows how long the flu's been around in, before people even wrote about it, but ever recorded by us anyway. And how wonderful it was. And then next, a few years, I knew it was going to come, some scientists had altered it yet again to see if this thing could ever, if it ever returned by itself, which was pretty well impossible, then maybe it would mutate into this way or that way or that way, you know. And I say, here we go. And I'm all sitting waiting for it to happen. And there's no sanity here. But again, this is a human problem, obviously, with human people doing it. And being lauded as science takes off as the new god. They're the gods, you see. You're not supposed to question science at all. They are telling you what to do. I noticed too recently, the scientists and foreign presidents and prime ministers to ban congregations at churches meeting until this is all over. It's interesting that as they impose the laws of the world on the laws of the Godhead. Interesting. And they're training the people, oh yeah, you better obey or else. Well, what about social distancing? I mean, the churches are pretty well empty anyway. If you're all sitting, you know, 30 feet apart, that's pretty safe, isn't it? No. See, there's a lot of agendas getting fulfilled right now. And they never let a good crisis go to waste, as I say. I actually repeat that in so many talks years and years ago from the Council on Foreign Relations. I couldn't believe it. Every crisis there was, from 9/11 to 7/7 in Britain, to the bank crashes 7 and 8, these characters of the Council on Foreign Relations - Royal Institute for International Affairs were coming out and saying, oh, you know, we could really use this disaster to our advantage. And we could really use this disaster towards to fulfill our agendas. That was one of the ones that said 9/11, by the way. I didn't know who did it and said it. And I've got the article here. But when you look at what's happening now with the companies getting millions and millions from all countries, maybe billions, thrown at them, oh, save us, tax money, oh, save us. And there they go at it. You understand, they don't have to guarantee they're going to create anything to help you. That's great money, though. Yeah, great work if you can get it, isn't it? And I say the figures just don't add up at all. Anywhere. I mean, why don't they give you this? Why don't they give you? Well, it's a rhetorical question, but why don't they give you a comparison with every report they give you on this one? Where they're lumping everybody in with all kinds of flu in with it. What the normal flu rate should be. The average. You know, to make your own mind up. And if it's hammering on some countries worse than others, once again, ethnic-specific. And we do know that the receptors and so on are different people in the lungs that really activate this type of virus to start going, become more virulent. But so much of the agendas were. And yeah, you will definitely, if they can get their way, don't forget there's a big movement for the permanent ID, ID 2020 it's called. And that was with Bill Gates involved in it, and the usual characters that are new masters we don't elect that seem to appear, and the giants that they make, you know, the hidden masters have come forward and they're telling you, well, you're not going to drive out anymore, and you're going to live this way, and you're living austerity because you're rationing coming down the pike, and so on and so on. But there's nothing happening in any logical sequence. That's what makes folk wonder. Pandemic, oh, why would you still have jets and you can actually still book them and go around the world to infected areas and then come back in? Huh? That's... Do you really want to believe they're just stupid at top? No, it doesn't wash. When you see that happening, there's other motives going on here until they build up enough numbers to make the problem, perhaps. And then say, oh dear, we've got a problem now. Well, who would have guessed? It makes no sense at all. And then they're not supposedly equipped for it all, medical-wise, or even face masks, we're told-wise as well, even though under emergency powers, every year, the big agencies in the US, this is a good example with FEMA, they have massive stockpiles of things to use in all kinds of martial law-type scenarios, from radioactive fallout to any kind of biowarfare to whatever. They have all that stuff. But once again, how stupid are we? We didn't decide to give all the businesses to China. The politicians were told to sign agreements, get in with agreements with the NAFTA, starting with the NAFTA deal, and then getting expanded. put the USMCA, whatever they're calling it now, same thing, and they've expanded even further with Obama's Pacific Rim agreement. So they're involved in it too. It's all meshed into one as they keep just changing names of things. It's the same agenda. They're living through incredible agendas, which never dropped, including the wars against Syria, still going on. And Iran's still going on, you know. Even in this is a great time to really hit them when they're on their knees, or they're almost on their faces, actually. And they're hitting them, because there's agendas to be fulfilled. On the list, the Peanut Group. And then this big business is going to take in. And then there's a different way of living. What were they on about for years at the World Economic Forum? And they were going to use, and the Club of Rome, and they would use the climate thing as the big bugaboo to bring all these socialistic control policies on the whole planet. And the last big climate one they had, oh, people are not listening enough, and we'll have to get more authoritarian and demand who can have children and who will not have. The old socialist agendas on behalf of those who ran the Fabian societies from the 1920s, the 30s. That's what they said then they'd do. Nothing's changed. You're living through incredibly long-term agendas through foundations, etc. And foundations can live for centuries to fulfill the same goals, and they've got all the time in the world to do it, and they train every generation that they hire, once they bring them into it, to do the work, and then they retire, and there's already people taking over. You can't lose when you have that, with all the money in the planet to back you up, because the guys own all the money in the planet that own these foundations, all of them. But that's what you're living through. So you're living through a system where you're terrified. The press is saying, be very terrified. You can't make head nor tails. This is why your governments, this is what makes the panic happen, are all telling you to be very terrified, but they're not, and they tell you to go home and quarantine. No, like, just go home and stay there. With no follow-up, like, okay, how is your state designed to get any food to you, as an example? The folk in the cities have been cleaning out. Some of them are sitting waiting at 7 in the morning now, I hear, even in local cities. They were only given an hour in the morning. It probably had the same in the States and elsewhere. This is the global programs they unleash. Well, what about the old folk? Well, tend to come in at 7 in the morning. Yeah? All the old folk, you know, all the infirm ones again that they want to write here. 7 in the morning, and they can have an hour shopping. Well, the old folk are getting stampeded over, but other queues of every other age group is just dying to get in. And it's mayhem and madness. And you had this farce in Canada. It's a really wonderful farce because Canada is so politically correct because we're called progressive. All the things that you can't fathom at all as existing and being good for you and society, which they'll always give prizes to each other for doing. Canada's, you know, we're different. We won't need all this kind of authoritarian thing as they have in the States. We use the people's natural good judgment, and we'll just tell them what they'll do, and they'll do it because we're socialists, you see. And I think we're cleaned out before the States were cleaned out with the stores and the shelves and so on. But I don't blame the people because they're terrified. Government has not laid out anything saying, go home and self-isolate at quarantine and we'll make sure we can get food to you and here's how it will happen. But no, nothing like that at all. We just go home and stay there and what, starve? Is that the idea? Huh? Or like, you know, Canada, you know, just go home and quarantine yourself and maybe you can live on hope or something. Maybe you can just keep, you know, clutching a little red flag and waving it. You've got your flag to keep you warm, your socialist flag. Who knows? Because it's a farce. And you cannot believe that the people are just so idiocracy. It's idiocracy. You can't just believe that. No, there's always a method, as I say, to the madness. Always. And things that will get pushed in big time. So this is intended, obviously, was the stores. And this, you know, I've had reports of folk, and I understand folk trying to get enough to get through a month, because they've had no warnings from government or no advice that we're going to make sure after a month. No, nothing like that, nothing, zilch. So it's generally a small minority with the cash, big cash, who are literally filling rooms of staff up. Some guy was on the internet with a photograph, and he's like laying in a whole room of toilet rolls. A room full, you know. And I got a report from that someone saw a woman with five of these big push carts you get in the grocery stores, five of them. I don't know if she was linked them all together like a train, pulling them, loaded up like you wouldn't believe. That's how crazy folk are getting right now. And obviously, of course, it's designed to, that there's nothing left for anybody else. The government's made it that way. They've terrified the public with photographs from China for about 3 months, and then they're showing you how to be terrified and very afraid, and then they shoot here with no follow-up as to here's what we're going to do. And just stay calm. And you see, no one trusts the governments because they're such liars. And I could go on about them, but the fact that that's the basic thing too. Now, one thing is for sure, as you well know, some of these world leaders, all of them actually, they're all in their antivirals, the stuff that you aren't going to get or going to get to see. They will not get written off at the hospital either. You're a bit too old or, you know, whatever it is, and we're not going to treat you. No, the earth will get moved to save them, because we live in such a class-ridden communist society, and in socialist communism, there's an incredible hierarchy of more important people. And that's the truth of it. Who love to praise each other and how wonderful they are, and all the great jobs they've done, and everything. You know. I can remember giving the talking about euthanasia and all the rest of it, and writing folk off as dollars and cents, even though you're paid into it for years and years and years, maybe your whole life, into the healthcare system, because they take it off you, you know, the cash. But then they write you off it when they just write you off when you need it. Because bioethics, eh? Well, I didn't vote any bioethicists in. Who was the idiot that came up with, well, let's about to decide who should live and die, you know? So it's a good way to go, and a world where there's going to be too many of, you know, the wrong people. Quite amazing, eh? So, as I say, keep calm, folks. And, yep, no, you're not going crazy. We're all getting the same conflicting reports, as I say, even in the same articles by say, one author. You'll find them giving you about 10 different opinions and contradictions on the same topics and things and statistics to deliberately keep you confused, obviously. Obviously. And following the movie scripts too, it's wonderful. They're going to put up some these big inflatable outside tents, just like the movies they've trained you into the last few years, you know. And oh, here they go, to scare you even more, I suppose. I can remember in London, but again, London, they're going to put them in the big parks and stuff to make sure everybody sees them. This is the strategy they used to get World War II going before it happened, telling folk to be very terrified and get volunteers to dig up trenches. This was the Royal Institute for International Affairs had stated this. We quickly had the reports and the records because he had access to all their archives. Eh? And they all got together, all the media moguls who were the members of this organization too, all of them. And they work together to terrify the public, say, terrify the public, get them on until they think this really, and then they start hating Germany before the war starts, get them to hate the country you're going to fight with, you see, by saying they're coming, you're going to gas you. Also, let's dig trenches in London because we're going to get gas. That makes a lot of sense, doesn't it? And then they issued gas masks to everybody, even though there was nothing in any reports from Germany that they're going to gas anybody. But, oh, they're going to come across in waves of aircraft and just gas you. Mind you, they'd already done H.G. Wells' Things to Come movie, where they did that. There were the Freemasonry of the Air, remember that one? That's in the movie, in the book, Things to Come. Big, long, procrasted type of war against some other nation, guess what it would be? And eventually, the Freemasons of the Air would have to go over these little settlements that survived, that are turned to kind of barbaric feudalism. And the Freemasons of the Air would go over and gas them all. And then they come down in parachutes and round up the leaders and stuff and then create a new world. And that was released in the 1930s, too, getting them all ready for World War II. And so when you add in, oh, they're all going to get, the Germans are going to gas you all from the air. You see how they work it out? Predictive programming over and over, eh? So here's gas masks, and every mum had to have them for herself and her children. It was a fine to go outside your home without your gas mask and your little tin hat, you know.